On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is WEBR Fairfax Radio. You're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And on the Commons with me today is Richard Alton. We're going to be talking about how we really and truly do leave the American zone when we enter into a homeowners association. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, just fine. Thanks, Shu.
Okay, Richard, for those of you who don't know, I mean, if you just crawled out from under a rock someplace, Richard and his wife, Ava Alton, have been ordered by a judge to remove a flagpole with the American flag on it from their private property or face going to jail. And we're going to find out exactly what led to that decision. So, Richard, do you want to give us a little background? I know some people don't really know what happened, have not been following the story. So,
well, yeah, it's got a long history. It goes back 4 years. What happened basically is that I took the homeowner association's covenants at their word when I bought my property. I lived in planned communities before that I guess maybe had a little more of the intent of what planned communities were about when they were originally set up. And they had some restrictive covenants, but they talked about, you know, a little common area maintenance. And typically, I've lived in three or four now, and they've had, you know, two-page documents saying that you couldn't have exposed concrete block foundation on a house, things that are really basic like that. And when I moved to our home that we built now, I was real surprised to see that the old two or three pages had now grown to 250 pages.
Yeah.
But being a lawyer, I read it all. And I thought, gee, this is, you know, this is amazingly detailed, but couldn't find anything in there that I really thought would cause me a problem. I knew what I wanted to do with the property. I said, well, gee, what I need to do is to get everything approved by the developer, and I should be okay, even though this seems to be amazingly complex. Most people, I don't think, even read it. In fact, in Virginia, there was an attempt this year to get a law that said that they could wouldn't have to even give you a disclosure document any longer. They could just give you a two-page summary, which I don't know what that's supposed to do. But anyway, I read all these guidelines and decided that because of the size of the parcel we were buying and that I had been in the service and had a Purple Heart, that I would like to put an American flag next to my house on a flagpole. And went through the list of yard items, which are about 30 yard items, found manure piles listed and telling you that, you know, you couldn't put cat and dog waste in your manure pile, but otherwise everything was okay to have manure piles. I thought, gee, this is interesting. Specifications for architectural requirements and square footage requirements for dog houses. I said, boy, that's strange too. But flags or flagpoles didn't appear any place in the document, but they did have one reference to visual nuisances. But didn't define that. So anyway, I went ahead and got a letter to the developer laying out how I wanted to lay out the yard and the lot and put a spot on there for where the flagpole would be. Wrote a letter saying that you told me I don't need to get anything in my contract about flags or flagpoles because they're not specified in the document. And went ahead and built their house, which is a huge investment. It's an eight-bedroom, eight-bath home on land. The land alone costs $600,000, just the land, not the home. So it's a big investment for a guy whose dad worked 48 years in the same factory. So, but anyway, we moved in and we were happy with it. And we went ahead and put our flagpole up on Memorial Day 1999. And the next day there was an emergency board meeting which denounced the American flag as a visual nuisance atop my flagpole. And put in writing, put in writing the word visual nuisance and also put in writing that flags and poles have never been allowed in Windham and never will. They're considered a visual nuisance.
How old is Wyndham?
You know, that that point, it hit the news and became pretty explosive in the Richmond area, at least in terms of people's reactions. So I thought at that point the homeowners association would have common sense and back off on all this. And they didn't. To make the long story shorter, they did not back off. The General Assembly was coming into session in a couple of months, which they meet for about 3 months a year. Everybody in the General Assembly reacted to it. So again, being a person, I guess, believes a little more in the way the American system is supposed to work, I said, well, gee, the General Assembly's reacting to this. They'll resolve it. They'll pass a law that will make it clear that, you know, this is not going to work in this case. And that's exactly what happened. The General Assembly rallied. They voted 140-0 to pass the thing called the American Flag Law, and then turned around and governor signed it. So I went ahead and put up a permanent flagpole. Before it, I only had temporary flagpoles. And much to my surprise, I was sued based on that. And again, as a lawyer, I thought, well, this is okay. The law's now clear on it. The contract is doesn't say anything in it about flags or flagpoles, so how can any of this be a problem? Went to court and was told I'd have a jury trial. For a year and a half, I was told that, because there were fact issues about what had been agreed to, what hadn't been agreed to. Much to my surprise, about 2 weeks before the trial, the judge made the announcement in court that why should I have a jury trial? It makes
no
difference.
Isn't that your right? Isn't that your right, Richard?
Well, it's a right. People don't realize it. People think there's rights and lots of things. There's a lot of misunderstandings about the law. The law is nowhere near as fair as it should be. The law basically is you have a right to a jury trial if you're a criminal. But if it's a civil case, you don't.
Oh, really?
No, but the law in Virginia says that you have a jury trial when you have questions of fact, that you should have the public, a representation of a peer group, basically deciding what they want to believe and not who they want to believe, what they want to believe. And there were lots of things in this case that related down to the question of who to believe and what to believe, and applying common sense judgment as seen in the community, not necessarily a legalistic view of the judge.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge, for a year and a half, took the position that we would have a jury trial because there were significant fact issues in this case. Then I think once he definitely knew what he was going to do with the case before the trial, you know, had ever been held, he already had made his mind up on how he would handle this case and, you know, how he was influenced to make that decision. You'd have to make your own calls. But definitely, in my opinion, at least, he definitely had made his mind up before the trial. The problem was at that point, the trial was so far along in the process that there was no way to change anything at that point except to go through with the trial. So we went through with the trial, and the judge did exactly what I thought he would do, which is to say that all of my defenses were irrelevant and in any event needed to be handled within a separate case. And his explanation for that was my defenses were too complicated, so he didn't want to hear them.
Defenses were too complicated.
The trial would become too complicated if we handle our defenses in the case, and the defenses related to things like, you know, whether the association was properly had proper composition, had followed the law of Virginia, whether the contract was deceitful and listing all these items and not including flags and flagpoles when they definitely knew that they weren't allowed. They just didn't choose to tell anybody that, because it might affect lot sales. He said, well, that's really interesting, but none of that has any relevance to this case. This case is purely a contract law case that says, do you have a contract that says that they can make any rule they want? And if you have a contract that says the homeowners association can make any rule they want after you move in, take away rights that you already have, then you're going to lose the case. The only trouble was that he didn't tell me that a year and a half earlier when the whole thing started. He waited to about 2 weeks before the trial. Then he told us we would not have a jury and we could not present our defenses. Then when that happened, I obviously had a big problem. The other thing that he told us, which was a little surprising to me, was that the work of the General Assembly in passing the law 140-0 was now irrelevant also. In fact, the senator that had introduced the bill, the homeowners community is called Wyndham, and he had actually coined it, the Wyndham Flag Bill, and passed it 140-0. The judge said, well, that's fine, except that doesn't apply, the Wyndham Flag Bill doesn't apply to Wyndham. again, looking at, you know, what would be the homeowner association lawyer's view of the law, which is a very, very technical view, which is that the law is passed after I purchased my property, so it doesn't apply to my property.
Can I stop you here for just a second? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that the Virginia law regarding flags and homeowners associations basically says that they cannot prevent you from doing it unless they tell you before you buy the house.
Well, that's what was the senator and everyone thought it meant. It said that the had to be disclosed in the documents. The judge said, well, that's fine. That means that anybody buys land from this time forward, it has to be in their documents. He said it specifically does not apply to anybody that's already purchased land. And, you know, that was not the intent of the General Assembly at all. But that's how the judge chose to see it. Again, you've got to make your own judgments on where this judge is coming from. When he basically takes the jury trial away a couple weeks before, tells you you have no defenses, tells you the law that was passed by the General Assembly specifically in response to this case has no relevance, you just need to wonder what's motivating this judge.
Where did he get his legal background from before he became a judge?
Oh, I think he's a fine judge. I think he knows the law real well. I just think that you're in a very, very political, small community, and when you're dealing with county government and they're positioning county schools. And well, in the case of our developer, H.H. Hunt, out of Blacksburg, Virginia, the last subdivision he built, you think about, you know, selling a subdivision with an amenity package. Well, his amenity package included a county library built in the center of the community, named after the community, a county park paid for by the taxpayers, built in the center of the community, named after the community, a high school built in the center of the community, named after the community, an elementary school in the center of the community, paid for by taxpayers, and basically districted not to allow anyone to go there except people that live in his community. And so, in other words, our county taxpayers built a park, a library, a high school, and an elementary school in order to make this developer's property more marketable and higher priced. And that's the kind of who's under the sheets kind of question you have to ask about the county government in Rockland County, Virginia, and the relationship with the developers.
In Fairfax County, they have the what's known as the proffer system, and developer has got to provide all of these things to the county in order to be allowed to go ahead and develop these things. But you're saying the county actually built all
these? No, this is a county library, county park, county elementary school, county high school, all built by taxpayers' dollars and all districted to make sure that the districts only include, particularly the elementary school and high school, only include the higher income, newer subdivisions where the county governments had a real nice relationship with the developer. Sure. So you ask about, you know, why is the county judge rule the way he rules? Well, you just, you know, I'm not going to make the conclusions for you, but you need to make your own conclusions. I think it just points out how pervasive and how evil homeowner association and developer relationships have become. But in any event, I then got to that point, and the story even gets better, gets more bizarre. So at that point, the judge is deciding that I'm something of a borderline criminal, although he can't use that word because it's a civil case. They decide to present evidence that I had never been in Vietnam, had never been wounded, was a complete liar and fraud, although I just got a veteran citation from the U.S. Congress for my combat service on Veterans Day, presented by a congressman that lives in Windham, so they can forget that issue. But basically, my reputation was trashed, the case was lost, and the judge turned around and said, well, now you have to pay their damages. And he said, at this point, I compute those to be $88,858. In addition to that, I'm putting together another $6,000 or $7,000 to reimburse Henrico County for the cost of police and public works folks to come over with a bulldozer and knock over your flag and American flag and flagpole should you not take it down voluntarily. At that point, I said, well, that's fine. I appeal. And, you know, he couldn't deny me my right of appeal, so I appealed to the Virginia Supreme Court, which upheld his decision, appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which upheld his decision, didn't uphold his decision, just upheld his right to make the decision. That's an important distinction. They never reviewed the facts. All they said is basically, does the judge have the right to handle this kind of case and make a decision in it? And the answer is, yes, he does. Did he make a right decision? Well, they didn't decide that. They just decided if he could make the decision. So anyway, that happened, and that took another year and a half. The trial was in June 2001. Then you get back to a week and a half ago, and we had a hearing in Henrico Court for the final disposition of this case. And at that time, the judge decided that my $95,000 that I had had to post with the court was now history. He basically turned the check over in to the homeowners association, and I couldn't stop that because he already had the money. I would not have been allowed to appeal the case if I hadn't posted the $95,000. That was another ruling. He did not give me a right to appeal the case unless I actually posted $95,000 with the court. Otherwise, he would not have allowed me to appeal it. So anyway, that $95,000 went away, and then he said, now you owe him another $10,000 of interest, and on top of that, I've got bills in front of me that they gave to us 20 minutes before the court hearing. They gave it to us, the court hearing was first thing in the morning, they gave it to us at 20 minutes of 5 the evening before, so effectively 20 minutes before, asking for something like $50,000 more of, quote, damages for all the harm I've done to the Homeowners Association. And he said, I'll review these as I review the other bills and give you a ruling on that within the next couple of weeks. And then he went on to tell me, after telling me that my bill had gone at that point up to about $150,000. And again, I haven't murdered anyone, you realize. I haven't committed any violence or anything. I never defamed anyone, never did a thing other than fly my American flag on Memorial Day.
Well,
then he went ahead and told me that, told the lawyer, because my wife wasn't there, she was at work, to make sure that the flag came down by March 1st. If it didn't come down, then he would go back to his recourse, which previously had included a bulldozer in his recourse and police. This time it was a little different. He said, be in court on March 28th, have a show cause order prepared. He told the Wyndham Foundation people that, which is like a contempt of court type order. And he told my lawyer to have both of his clients, my wife and I both, be in court fully prepared to face the full consequences of the court. And that's his quote, prepared to face the full consequences, which, being a lawyer in Virginia, I know Virginia courts are really rough. That generally means incarceration for civil contempt and being held in jail basically indefinitely until you comply with the court's order.
So basically, if you go to jail, it would be for contempt of court.
I'd go to jail for contempt of court, and basically it's open-ended. You could stay in jail. I mean, there was one fellow here that was a city councilman that was in court for contempt of court. I think he stayed in jail for a little over a year.
You're kidding, that long?
Oh, yeah, a little over a year.
The taxpayers in Virginia are going to be... just because you're flying an American flag,
we're
going to be paying?
Well, there'll be a different outcome then, because that would then have destroyed my family, would destroy us financially. My wife and I both own our own businesses. I would actually, in my case, would put 25 wage earners out of work because I have 25 employees, and the business wouldn't run without me. My wife has about 25 employees, so that would shut her business down and put her 25 families out of work. So we'd have about 50 families that would go into unemployment.
And we
two businesses would be destroyed. One's been here for 20 years, the other's been here for 14 years, and we'd be bankrupt basically. We can't afford to pay our bills if we don't have any income. So that's where we're at now. So as of March 28th, we're going to petition the court for work release, so that we can hopefully continue our job, but we'll have to be with Judge Harris. And if Judge Harris wants to really destroy us, then I guess we won't have work release.
That's an absolute outrage, Richard.
No, it isn't. It's the law of Virginia. That's what Judge Harris would say. In fact, Judge Harris made a speech in court that he's took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Virginia, and he absolutely intends to fully uphold the Constitution. And he was telling me that I'm violating the Homeowners Association's constitutional rights, and that if he has to put me in jail and if he has to keep me there as he did the city councilman was kept in jail for a year and a half, that's the way it would be.
Well, that's ridiculous because, you know, if you go in and invoking the Constitution into an association, the first thing they'll tell you is, hey, wait a minute, you know, you're absolutely wrong because you gave up the rights.
We gave up our constitutional rights.
Since when does an association have a constitutional right?
Does what?
Since when does an association have a constitutional right?
Well, everyone has a right. A corporation is a legal entity, like a person, as far as the law is concerned. They might not. They probably do. Could say they have a free speech right and all that too. But yeah, they have rights the same. And basically, what he's saying is that he's going to uphold the Constitution and stop me from violating their civil rights by flying my American flag on my own land.
For anybody.
And that's why he's prepared. Now, he didn't say he was going to put me in jail. What he told me was to prepare the other side to have a show cause order. A show cause order can carry with it incarceration. And when he tells people to come to court, physically come to court, that's a way in the lawyer community of telling the lawyer to make sure your client brings a toothbrush. Because there's no reason to tell us to have to physically appear in court unless he expects to send us to the back room to put the orange outfits on, which is what they wear when they're incarcerated here, and, you know, go out of the courtroom in shackles like this.
That's absolutely outrageous, Richard.
Well, it's pretty common in Virginia for people to go into court in a suit and go out of court in an orange outfit with handcuffs and ankle chains on. I mean, that's pretty much the court system in Virginia. We have more executions here than, I think, any state in the country. In a D.C. sniper case, we were the venue of choice to try the 17-year-old, which I'm not having any mercy on him, but the reason Virginia was picked as the place to try this 17-year-old kid that ran around murdering people is because the courts of Virginia would have no hesitation in executing a 17-year-old. They've executed several 17-year-olds in recent years. They executed a mentally retarded person not long ago. And that's the reality. I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that's reality of Virginia courts. And this Judge Harris, I believe, will have no hesitation in putting my wife and I in our orange pajamas and sending us off to the jail in order to protect the civil rights of the Homeowners Association, which is the right to demand that I remove my American flag from next to my house on Memorial Day as a combat wounded veteran.
Okay. But now, I know that there are people out there who are sitting there thinking, well, you know, you agreed to do this in... Gee whiz, I really wouldn't want to live next door to a flag.
That was part of my defense that the judge would not allow me to present.
Yes.
My defense was that it was a defense based on the contract being fraudulent, and he would not hear any of that.
Oh, I agree with you.
Because the word flag or flagpole never appeared any place in the documents, although manure piles did. You know what they told the newspaper in response to that question? They told the newspaper, we had anticipation that people living in Windham might want to have a manure pile. We never dreamt that anybody would want to fly an American flag next to their house.
No, but what I'm going to say here, Richard, is that you're going to have people who say, well, you know, the association has the right because maybe the next-door neighbors don't want a flag flapping in the wind making all this noise. And, you know, for those of you who are sitting there smugly thinking that, let me tell you that the flag is on a lot on its own. And the next-door neighbors have absolutely no problem with the flag being there.
The next-door neighbor helped me put it up.
The next-door neighbor helped you put it up. Because I talked to your next-door neighbors. They have absolutely no problem with it.
Every person in my little neighborhood community, because each, you know, it's like a lot of these big communities, they have these little sub-communities within them.
Mm-hmm.
And my little sub-community, every neighbor, every homeowner signed individual letters and sent them to the judge. The judge said there's no relevance to these letters. It doesn't matter what the neighbors think. It matters what the board thinks.
Oh, boy.
So,
well, would it help if we all wrote to the judge and told him that he's wrong?
No, not really. The judge, he's already made his ruling. What has happened now, and my wife is, you know, starting to really come to an understanding of this, is that we've been through the entire court system. We've been through the Virginia General Assembly. The governor can't do anything. So there's really nothing left to be done in Virginia except a southern tradition, which is interesting, but it's not too true in northern states, which is legislation by constitutional amendment. That's the term people use down here for it. And what happens in most states, and as in the United States, is the constitution of the state is almost never changed. What happens is that the Constitution stays the way it is, and if there's some major event like, you know, when FDR decides he wants to keep running for office or something, and they decide to do a constitutional amendment to say how many terms a person can be president of the United States. You know, that's about it as far as constitutional amendments at the federal level. Here in Virginia, whenever somebody is caught up in this evil politics, I guess is the only way to describe it, and the committee system of the General Assembly and all that is basically preventing the will of the people from being heard because bills are going to committees and being killed in committees to the extent that they can't get voted on. And the laws can't get changed because you can't vote on anything that can't get out of committee. And two or three people that are key can basically block a law from becoming a law in Virginia. When that happens and there's enough folks upset about it, they can then get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. And it sounds crazy, but it happens about every year, at least every year, at an average of one a year, there's a constitutional amendment in Virginia to change something that should have been done through the General Assembly but couldn't be achieved.
Well,
the best example is some sportsmen were upset here a few years ago. They thought that their rights to hunt and fish were being infringed. Well, now the Virginia Constitution says every Virginian shall have a right to hunt and fish. And that's a constitutional amendment that was put in a couple of years ago. As weird as it sounds, that's where we're at now. We're at a point of saying there's need a constitutional amendment to say that a Virginian has a right to fly the American flag on their own land. And that's basically what we're trying to do.
That's absolutely insane.
We may have to change the Constitution of Virginia to overcome the Homeowners Association. I think we can do it quite readily, but it's going to be about a 3 or 4 year process.
Well, we'll get started on that. But for those of you who are in Virginia and listening to this, it was Delegate Terry Suit of Virginia Beach who made the motion last year when there was another bill in committee to table it pending the outcome of your lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a bit like putting the horse before the cart?
Yeah, well...
Or the cart before the horse, sorry.
Well, it was interesting because it was theatrical more than anything. Because here you had this lady who was hand-picked for this. She works for a mortgage company and she's supported heavily by the realtors.
Absolutely.
And what her husband is a Navy SEAL. So before she does anything, she stands up. Again, the press likes to pick up on drama. She makes the announcement that you're insulting all of us. We're all loyal Americans. I hadn't insulted anyone. We're all loyal Americans, and my husband is on deployment in the Gulf, and he's an active-duty military person, and it's an insult to me that you're questioning our patriotism. Well, I never said a word like that. But the point was that it was done. And it just shocked me, like, why is she saying this? I know why she's saying it now, because that was the quote that was such a good quote for the Richmond newspaper to pick up on.
Right, seemed to be questioning
and it went into
patriotism.
The newspaper. But to give you an idea how the politics work, they had the hearing on this particular bill that was supposed to try to address some of these things, and it goes into the General Laws Committee, but then the General Laws Committee has a subcommittee on housing. Well, the subcommittee on housing only has, like, five people on it. So what happens is you've got five people that are basically handpicked by the developers in the real estate industry to get onto this subcommittee on housing. Then after that, once they're there, they make sure that we just send money and money and money and donations and donations and donations to these five key people, because as long as they're in that position, no bills can pass in Virginia. Nothing. No legislation can become enacted that relates to housing unless it gets past these five people, the Subcommittee of General Laws on Housing. And those people basically just do anything that the Homeowners Association and developers tell them to do in the real estate industry. And if anybody comes in with a consumer bill, then it goes to this Subcommittee on Housing, and they just table it.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's something that was just put out by CAI where they're complaining about how to deal with a bill that has more of a consumer slant to it, and they're going to try and kill it. But we're going to take a break in just a second here, but before we do, I want to say one more quick thing about Terry Suit. She's the one who, do you remember the lady up here in Falls Church who was being evicted, the 82-year-old woman?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Terry Suit called up here and was so apologetic. Oh, my God, how could we possibly have laws that would allow something so heinous and unacceptable to happen? I'm going to introduce legislation to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again. Well, she managed to get her name slapped all over the place in the papers up here. I don't think there was even a hint of a suit last year or a bill last year to rein in or control any of these associations that are totally out of control, completely amok. So anyway, if you're thinking, if you've got a choice this year, you know, when you go to the polls.
Down in the Virginia Beach area, right?
That's right. But we
the other thing is, can you get another minute? I can say something?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, there's the captain of a naval guided missile destroyer in Norfolk,
mm-hmm.
Commander Parrott, has been ordered to remove his flag from his front house. He was in the Gulf firing missiles into Afghanistan. His wife was being fined by the Homeless Association for flying an American flag in the front yard. But again, if some of the people in the Navy and the military services down in the Norfolk area and Chesapeake in that area know about Terry Suit's record, they may look. This is an election year for the full House of Delegates. They may look again at whether this lady really should be in the House of Delegates.
I agree with you. We'll get the word out. Anyway, but we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Richard Alton again. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions and is coming to you from WBR Fairfax Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. It is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Wyndham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olton, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you will not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. And before we get back to our guest, Richard Olton, I'm going to read you a very quick, short public announcement that I got in the mail just as I was coming to the studio today. The Fairfax County Department of Family Services is desperately looking for foster parents and adoption programs. So if you're interested and you've got room in your house, please contact Keisha Edwards at 703-324-7639 and take a kid and make a difference in the kid's life. And we're back with Richard. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
We were talking before we went on break. We were talking a little bit about Delegate Suit, who managed to kill a bill that you had in front of the legislature that would have allowed, not you, because it was not retroactive,
right,
but it would have allowed Virginians to fly a flag without being hounded and just abused by their homeowners associations, right?
Yeah, it was just a forward-looking bill, and again, she made it out as if it was something was sweetheart for me. All it said was that you had a right to fly your American flag in spite of homeowner association restrictions. However, this bill does not apply in any retroactive way, so it would only have applied to people that in the future that wanted to do that and had no retroactivity in my case at all. But then, you know, that was very clear language, but again, she made the statement basically that this was something that was Richard Olten trying to help himself and that we're not going to deal with this. But anyway, that's kind of beating a horse to death, I guess. But the point was, again, it was just a total manipulation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these politicians, there are very few of them that are worth anything, in my opinion. You, in a nutshell, okay? In a nutshell, in November, you were awarded a Congressional Veteran Commendation by the Commonwealth of Virginia, and in January you were told by the same Commonwealth of Virginia you'd go to jail for flying a flag?
Yeah, I was awarded that to U.S. Congress by Congressman Eric Cantor.
Okay.
Who actually lives in Windham. And, you know, it's very interesting to think he's a U.S. Congressman, lives in Windham, and yet as a congressman, he has no right to put a U.S. flag in front of his house. But he awarded me, based on my military service in Vietnam, awarded me a congressional award.
Well, can you tell us a little bit? I mean, your unit in Vietnam, you were the hardest hit unit?
Right, we're talking about a battalion. A battalion is,
okay,
at that time, was about 800 Marines.
Okay.
And we were given a name by others in the Marines, which stuck to the point, you know, throughout the history of the battalion, called the Walking Dead. The Walking Dead got that name because we had the longest sustained combat in the history of the Marine Corps and the highest casualty rate in the history of the Marine Corps. And again, without making judgments about the Vietnam War or anything, I joined on my 17th birthday. I extended my enlistment 13 months specifically, which is a tour of duty, specifically to go to Vietnam with the Marines. So I'm not criticizing the Marines or nor Vietnam. I mean, that was my place to be. It was where I wanted to be, and I fought to be there and extended my enlistment to be there. So don't take comments negatively. But basically what happened was the 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, did a really good job, and they were a very gung-ho unit. They went into country, into Vietnam, and suffered their first man killed in action in June 1965. In August 1969, the last member of the battalion was killed in combat. That's 51 months. During the 51 months, my battalion had men killed in action in 48 out of 51 months. And that just is documentation that my battalion basically went into combat and stayed in continuous combat for over 4 years.
Does that explain why? I mean, is that the reason you want to keep the flag?
Well, that's part of it, but being in combat is relative also.
Okay.
On the Vietnam Wall, there are 605 names from my battalion, which gives us a killed in action to unit strength rate of 76%. I was wounded in a few battles that were just a few weeks before an operation called Operation Buffalo. In Operation Buffalo, my battalion, 800 men, had 99 men in 2 days of combat. We had 99 killed and 300 wounded. We had 50% casualties in 2 days.
Wow.
You really haven't had that kind of history, intensity of combat, duration of combat, or casualty rates. You've had combat for battalions, I'm not going to belabor Marine Corps history, but you've had situations like landings on Iwo Jima and all that where you would have that many Marines in a battalion killed in 2 days, 50% casualties in 2 days. What you never had in the history of the Marine Corps is any unit that went into combat and stayed in combat for over 4 years as a unit and suffered men killed in action in 48 out of 51 months. Nor have you ever had a battalion in the history of the Marine Corps that had 76% of the battalion's strength wind up as killed in action.
And you feel that, I want you to help us understand why the flag is so important to you. Why not take it down instead of going to jail?
Well, what happened with the flag was I initially just put up a temporary flagpole on Memorial Day that flew the Purple Heart flag next to it and the Marine Corps flag, they just got me angry in some ways because they were quoted in a Richmond paper after they denounced the American flag as a visual nuisance. They then went on and said that that they had banned the Purple Barney from another person's yard. That was a visual nuisance. And my Purple Heart flag was no different than a Purple Barney. Both of them were visual nuisances that could threaten property value. In other words, I guess I was making it a redneck town by having a Purple Heart. So that angered me. And then when the law passed, I then went from a temporary flagpole to a permanent flagpole. I put up a much nicer one, but at that point I felt emotionally enough about this whole thing that I put a plaque in front of it, small plaque, low to the ground, but dedicating it to the memory of the guys, to my boys, to my Walking Dead Marines.
And
that's on my website, which I would love to have somebody could help me update it if anybody's listening, but I haven't been updated in about a year, although it has 26,000 hits on it, called AmericanFlagTrial.com. And there's a photo of the plaque to the Walking Dead Marines that talks about the history of my battalion. But it said once that I put that plaque in the ground and put the flag behind it, that I had then committed myself in the memory of these men, not to take it down. So it's more than the American flag now. It's a commitment to these guys that died in Vietnam with me.
Would you feel like you were betraying them if you took it down?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you...
And I was a combat medic, so a lot of these guys died in my arms, literally.
So basically this is your way of honoring the people who laid their lives down for us.
It wasn't intended that way initially. It only became that way after they constantly insulted my service. They insulted the memory of the guys from Vietnam. They basically laughed at me for having ever served in Vietnam.
You're not reaching this decision lightly, because basically what's happening here is the association has ruined your life, basically, and it's got much...
Well, I'm a lot stronger than that. They haven't ruined my life. They never will. They haven't ruined my marriage. They haven't ruined my wife. My wife is an immigrant from China, and she's a very proud American. And
she's a lovely lady. But you have to...
So it's made us have a much stronger marriage. We had a wonderful marriage before. It's even stronger now.
But, Richard, you wrote me an absolutely heartbreaking email about the struggle you're facing and the decisions you're going to have to make regarding your two tiny kids and the third one that's on the way.
Right.
And you have... You adopted two children, Alexis,
yeah,
who's 7.
I'm 58. My wife is 48, and we've adopted orphans from China because we were too old to have our own children. So we adopted as an infant Alexis, who's 7, but she came to us as an infant.
Mm-hmm.
She was such a joy that we then adopted Jamie, also as an infant, who's now 3. And then we were notified by the orphanage that Jamie now has a biological brother that's in the orphanage in China. And we've been approved to bring him home. And he's also just a little fella, an infant. And the problem we have now is if we have no relatives in the area at all, no relatives. One of my brothers is 70, and my other brother is 68. So we really don't have anybody my parents are long ago dead. We really don't have, anyone to take care of our children.
You wrote to me and you said that...
So if we go to jail, we basically try to make a decision on what to do with our children. We may need to turn them over to social services in order to, keep them in the school. Otherwise, we'd have to, the nearest relative we have is up in New Jersey, and... Even that relative has only has adult children. So I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, we may wind up having to turn our kids over to social services. And certainly, we're also very confused about China, because China, if we have any kind of record of incarceration, they may not understand that. And our approval to adopt Jamie's birth brother may be disapproved because they may see us as criminals.
So you may actually lose your son. And I would say that that's pretty much ruining your lives. You bought this beautiful house.
I've faced a lot of losses in my life, but I love every minute of life, and it's not going to ruin our life. It's going to be a major issue and a major crisis, but some people, some of us actually feel like each crisis makes us stronger.
Okay, maybe ruin is a bad word, but it certainly destroys a lot of what you've got going for you right now.
Well, I think what it'll do more, I just don't really care much about what happens in my own life, I guess. I mean, I do the best I can, and I'm a very happy person. But what would be the greatest sin, I think, is what it will do to our son. Because if he can't get out of that orphanage...
It's just too hard to think about, isn't it?
It's tough, yeah.
It's really tough.
But, eventually, I guess, we'll find a way. We've been approved by the Chinese government, but, they do background checks. They want to know about police records and all this. And if anything comes back to the effect that we've been put in jail, I don't know what that will, the Chinese government, again, my wife being Chinese, we understand a lot of the cultural differences, and it's hard for the Chinese government to understand why somebody would be in jail except if you're a criminal.
And flying a flag is a crime, apparently, in Virginia, which is unbelievable.
it's interesting because, I actually kind of focused in college and all that on legal ethics and so forth. So I've got a pretty broad scope, and I wouldn't call myself an expert in the field, but I do see sometimes the bigger issues. And what's really interesting now is that this situation just happened a couple of days ago in Virginia, in Richmond. There was an article in the paper that the Homeowners Association had basically overridden the county government.
Yeah, you told me about that. I found that
article. It doesn't sound like a really big issue, but it's kind of scary in a way when you have a homeowners association vetoing county government. It's pretty amazing. And what happened here is that the county government, I think there's two counties in Virginia, Arlington and Chesterfield County, that have a total free recycling program for every resident of the county. Well, one of the homeowner associations here ordered its residents not to participate in the recycling program and told them that they would be fined if they did. And the reasoning behind this is that if they participated in the county's recycling program, they could create a visual nuisance because the containers would be at the curbside, and that could lower property values. So therefore, if they participate in the county recycling program, they'd be subject to fines and lawsuits and all this. And so effectively what they've done is they've overridden county government. The county has a recycling program for everyone in the county, except those that live in this particular planned community called Bexley, Bexley. And, it's amazing that these people can have this power.
What's even scarier, Richard, is that, in Fairfax County, 90%+ of all housing is in an association. The county mandates them. Not only that, but they're tearing down non-controlled housing to make room for more of these leaky condos and... It's just incredible.
That's another thing that people miss. They think, gee whiz, you go into these communities, but we didn't buy into Wyndham because we loved the idea of living in Wyndham. We simply wanted to have a nice home in a neighborhood, and we didn't want to be, I don't mean in a negative way, but we didn't want to be isolated out in the woods someplace where we come home, my wife would come home from her work at night and go down some dark, dark gravel driveway for half a mile to get to a house. That's a little scary.
Yeah.
We wanted to live in a neighborhood. We wanted nearby neighborhood schools and all that.
Good old-fashioned neighborhood
But you can't live in a neighborhood any longer without giving up your freedoms. And there's no way to live in a neighborhood. A new modern neighborhood with new homes. You might buy into some smaller community that's been around for a long time and doesn't have a Gestapo Homeowners Association. But even at that, who knows what's going to happen a year from now, because the mechanism is there for two or three people to decide they're going to take over the community, and they can do it.
Well, what we're seeing, and you're absolutely right, and what we're seeing is a lot of non-homeowner association developments. You've got a handful of people who decide, gee whiz, wouldn't it be great if we could have a mandatory membership association, and we could then sort of start riding roughshod over everyone. So they walk around with this pack of lies and these things to sign, and people are basically signing away their lives, thinking, oh, well, you know what, that's great. You know, we're going to make sure that Henry down the street doesn't paint his door pink, or that Jack around the corner doesn't put his truck on blocks, or, you know. His
I had that up in Louisa County, which is a lot of people from the D.C. area go down to Lake Anna.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there was a little community there was built up that we owned a house in. We sold it, actually in part because of the expenses from this.
Mm-hmm.
But we sold our lake house, and there was no homeowners association. And, you know, one day I got this notice in the mail that the organizational meeting was being held and the dues would be. And these are the papers to sign and return. It was from a lawyer. And it wasn't like, gee, you have a choice. It's like, oh, you have to do this. Send this back. This is from a lawyer's office, like a bill. And, you know, people not knowing any better would think, gosh, I pay my bills. I guess I better pay this.
Yeah.
And they were doing it under the guise of needing to repair this little community dock that had gone into disrepair.
Yep.
And in order to repair it, we had to have this homeowners association formed. And this is what your assessment would be for the repairs of the dock. And but by the way, you've just joined the homeowners association, and you know who knows what we're going to do in the future. Of course, they didn't tell you that.
Yeah.
They just said you have to sign these documents. It was as if the neighbors were going to sue you if you didn't, kind of a thing.
It's like not saying you can't have a flagpole.
Right.
Because maybe you wouldn't buy the house.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe some people just didn't care about the dock either, but they weren't really given a choice. They were just told sign these documents, send them back, and enclose your check, and now the homeowners association will then exist. And,
oh boy.
But, you know, people, I mean, I knew exactly what it was. I didn't send it back. But, I just don't know what my neighbors thought about it. And again, that was one of these things where some lawyer was coming in trying to create another client, I guess.
Well, you end up with a handful of people who decide this. One of the most active and effective activists we have has never lived in an association. She lives in Houston in an older development. And somebody came around with these papers, essentially sign here, and we're going to set up an association. She didn't think anything of it until one of her neighbors came by and said, oh, haven't you been listening to the news? Haven't you heard what these things are doing? So she started doing some research, and, you know, she's absolutely adamantly opposed to them now. And she's the one who set up the website, hoadata.org, that lists the 17-plus thousand foreclosures in Houston, in Harris County, one county.
Well, they were just trying to modify the law in Virginia to make it easier, I guess, to foreclose. I noticed that on the General Assembly's website. And I just went to a seminar on bankruptcy law, and there was a section in the ring binder materials they handed out on changes to make it easier for foreclosure in Virginia by homeowner associations.
That's all we need, is to give these people more power. Like, they haven't abused it. Richard,
well, you've got Senator Mims, and he seems to look out for people, even though he represents Reston, so.
Well, no, actually, he's in
I thought he was up in Reston area, but he's made some pretty good reforms down there, so not everybody in the General Assembly is, you know, some people are actually close to it, and their voters are being negatively impacted by this, even though they represent areas of heavy homeowner concentration, are actually trying to achieve some positive change.
Well, Bill Mims is really a decent guy. He's a very, very nice guy. He's an attorney. He's represented associations. He knows exactly what's going on in these things. And it's thanks to Bill Mims that we have some protections, consumer protections in the Virginia law. But, you know, no thanks to the rest of them. They sort of look at you, well, didn't you agree to this stuff? we've got a lot of work ahead of us, Richard. Richard, thank you so much for joining me on the comments today.
Well, anybody wants to check that website out and can help me with it, AmericanFlagTrial.com.
And we're going to have a petition. You're going to send it to me electronically.
Yes, I am.
And we'll put it up, maybe get it up on your website, get it up on my website as well. You can download it, mail it back to Richard. He's going to make sure that the General Assembly gets a copy, and the governor, who, by the way, does not have an email address. so we can email things to him, unless you go on his website. I mean, there you go. How's that for distancing yourself from your constituents? Well, thank you very much again, Richard. And
okay.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you for everything you do.
Oh, listen, if we can do something positive here, you know, it's all worth it. But join us next week. We'll be here again. And be sure to tune in if you missed any of this or want to hear it again. And I'm sure a lot of you will.